Hi, this is Alexander Rossi, 2008 Formula BMW America's and World Final Champion, and you're listening to F1Weekly.com.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Faub, my co-host. Nasser Hamid will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second part of the show. This is podcast number 347, May 16th, 2009. Stephen?
This F1 Weekly Podcast brought to you by the Jim Russell Rotax Challenge and Marin Karting. Check them out. You know you want to.
Thank you, Stephen. And of course, we love and support the Jim Russell Northern California Rotax Challenge. Steve, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Great. How are yourself, Mr. Rogers?
I'm so wonderful that I've decided to put a big picture of Max Mosley right over the fireplace. That's how happy I am.
Well, I've put one over the front of my dartboard.
That's good for you. Well, it's pretty much, you know, Ferrari has drawn the line in the proverbial sand.
In the kitty litter.
And, correct, in the oil-absorbent materiel. And, of course, you know, everywhere I read, everybody thinks they're bluffing. Except for me.
I don't think they're bluffing. I seriously believe that they do not want to participate in Formula One if there's a budget cap. Because then, for them, it comes down to the fact that if they're not competitive for whatever reason, they can't turn around and just pull a little extra money out of the Fiat fund and do a little bit more development, or, you know, line the right pocket of the particular FIA official to allow them to reroute the oil channels in their motor to improve its performance. You know, I don't blame them. Formula One is top flight. It's supposed to basically be an open-ended, you know, series, and by putting this budget cap on it, you're basically creating a pseudo spec series, because you're going to end up with half the grid running the same motor on the same chassis. It's not right.
I agree with you, Stephen. And therefore, on today's program, who will be left standing in Formula One? Can Formula One really exist without Ferrari? Will Braun make sure Rubens gets a win? And Motorsports Mondial with Nasser, and of course, we have a special interview with Michael Ramies. So there you have it, and I agree with you, but I honestly think that they're going to pull out. It's convenient. They would save money. They would just get rid of Kimi Raikkonen, because he's already asleep in the back anyway.
Yeah.
Well, Felipe Massa will suffer, but he might be able to come back. And to be honest with you, I think going back to Le Mans and competing against the likes of Peugeot and Audi, Pescarolo in the LMP1 class is, I think, would be a great option.
Yeah, I think for them it would actually probably cost them less and get them more press, especially going back to Le Mans for the 24 hours. And then, you know, they could actually turn around too and put money into Fiat's racing program and maybe get into
rally
or go back to, or get into one of the touring car series, either the Germans or the British, and run there. It's convenient to get out of Formula One. I think they haven't really necessarily been happy with Formula One for a couple of years, even though they pretty much had their way, and maybe it just was no longer a challenge.
But you know what, Stephen? We both know that their biggest market is the United States of America.
Yeah.
They could come here.
Well, they could get into the Le Mans series that runs here in the States.
El Nascaro. How's that sound? Huh? What do you think? A big Lancia sedan? One of those big Lancia four-door sedans? El Nascaro. I like it.
You should get into drag racing.
You know, I don't know, but I remember back in the 80s when they threatened to quit Formula One and wanted to go into the Indy 500. And they had already completely finished and designed an IRL car, which I believe is in the museum in Maranello now. So sometimes these guys can do it. And I think the biggest problem is this could be bad news for Bernie Eccleston.
Definitely not a good thing. You got to figure that Tifosi is probably outside of Italy is probably 20% at any given track.
We see red at a lot of tracks.
Yeah, you know, it's probably the predominant foreign fan base for Formula One. You know, and for Ferrari to pull out, that's going to be really rough, I think. To get attendance, you know, because a lot of those people are just going to go, there's no red car, why am I going? And I think Ferrari also has the other option, too, is the fact that they're supplying the cars to the A1GP. So, you know, they can keep running, building a performance car, like a Formula One car, and just run it on those tracks where they get to build all the cars and get all the dough for them. So, yeah, Bernie's not going to be a happy camper. I'm still trying to figure out why Max Mosley is still running in the FIA. Running the FIA.
Of course, Ferrari has also filed papers in the French court system trying to get an injunction against the 2010 regulations. They're requesting the French court's order the FIA to remove from its website all modifications pertaining to next year's regulations. And of course, the deadline for signing up for the 2010 Formula One season is on May 29th. But if I think, and I think I'm right, but if Ferrari bails, Renault bails. I guarantee it, because Renault is not interested in fighting against
Mercedes or Toyota, or
it's just not as glamorous. And it's a good reason to pull out of Formula One because of the economic crisis without egg on your face, because you could just blame Max.
Yeah, well, you just go, hey, we were in this to compete against Ferrari. So,
see ya. Toyota will pull out as well. Once again, they don't have to tell people that they're pulling out because of financial reasons. They could just say, it's because of Max.
A little tougher for Toyota to get out. Well, maybe not. But, yeah.
They could go back to Le Mans.
Yeah, exactly.
Those facilities.
And God knows, they're in every other racing series in the world, except for possibly Rally. And they could get back into Rally, for that matter. Maybe this would be a good resurgence for Rally.
I agree. I think this is going to push that one big domino that's going to affect racing for years to come. And it's sad to say, but one man and the FIA are responsible.
Yeah, and, you know, this is one of those situations where I don't understand why Bernie isn't. He's been unusually quiet.
That's because he's stunned. And Jackie Stewart said it best. The FIA are a regulatory
bureaucracy.
That's all they're supposed to just make sure that we are abiding by rules and safety, and the tracks are up to the spec. But they shouldn't be telling teams how much they need to spend. That's up to the teams. FOTA should initiate those kinds of rules.
Yeah, it's actually something that should be part of the commercial agreement, not the sporting regs.
I agree completely. I think Max is making Jean-Marie Balestre look like an angel.
He's definitely really starting to push the boundaries of what would be their purview as the, first he wants to come green, so he goes to KERS, just turned out to be a fiasco. And, you know, wanted to go to the homogulated engine, and that has come out, I would like to see engine development, because that was always, you could see people, they improve the car, they improve the engine, they get faster, you know, it snowballs through the season, but we don't get that anymore. Now it's all, you know, tweaking the car.
Not only that, but the marketplace would give an automatic budget cap. I mean, these companies can't spend and spend and spend, especially in these economic times. The marketplace, trust me, will bring things back into control without having more regulations.
They already have.
Exactly.
Every team on the grid is spending probably a minimum of 10, 20, 25% less than they have in previous seasons just because the money isn't there.
Well, the judicial system in France, I think there's a couple of tifosis in there because they've got a date on Tuesday, May 19th, where the courts will hear Ferrari's claims or attempt at stopping the new regulations against the FIA. So we're going to see what happens. It's absolutely fascinating, but
curious to see what Ferrari's argument is, because that really isn't... It's not a legislative... They've got to be going after some kind of breach of contract type of...
And they're going to bring out the whole history of, you know, the FIA is now going against the grain.
Well, they're exceeding their
power.
Constituted authority.
Whichever that is. But no, I think it's out of control. And I honestly believe that if Max doesn't call Di Montezemolo and tell him, you know what, you're right, we're not going to do this, Ferrari will be gone for 2010.
Unless I can get the injunction in place.
Okay, enough of that. Let's quickly go to some drivers. Apparently, Sebastian Bourdais, a lot of talk by the water cooler about him getting axed and getting replaced by Pantano, who I think is like a year older than Bourdais, the oldest man to win in the GP2 series.
Yeah, that's like Fernando going to Ferrari. That, to me, is a little bit of a reach. It's not the type of move that would suit Toro Rosso. If you're going to jump, go for a younger driver. You know, Pantano, you're basically... Why would you give up Bourdais' experience for a guy that's never driven a Formula One car?
Because I think Toro Rosso is still a young team, and they're eager, and they see what Buemi's doing with the same car that Bourdais is not doing with. And in the end, I agree with you in terms of Pantano. He was with Jordan Formula One, really never showed anybody any great skills. If he had, he'd be in Formula One. And I think it's time to give Bruno Senna a chance. Younger, more.
If you're going to basically kick out Bourdais out before the end of the season, Senna would make a lot more sense to me than Pantano.
Exactly.
Outside the fact that, you know, you could probably get Pantano for, you know, a quarter of a mil.
Pennies on the dollar.
Exactly. Whereas, you know, Senna's probably going to cost you a couple mil. But
I agree with that. But we'll see what happens. I'm hoping Bourdais gets a stay for the entire season, and then they could just, you know.
Yeah, just let his contract expire and let him walk.
And not only that, but we won't even know if Red Bull and Toro Rosso will be back next year. But Toro Rosso will be a new entity next year. They'll be a manufacturer, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I don't expect them to fall off. The fact that they, you know, they're one of the few people on the grid who aren't being hammered quite so badly in the economic times as, say, the car manufacturers are.
And, of course, the wonderful world champion, Mr. Lewis Hamilton.
Wimp.
He's not happy with Formula One. It's not exciting anymore for him.
It's because he's not winning.
And he says it's all politics, and he's just not enjoying himself.
Well, maybe if he hadn't lied at the first race.
I don't know. I mean,
it's like, dude, you're the world champion. Enjoy it. Don't, you know, it's all politics.
He's
just get in the car. Just get...
He's disillusioned.
What, do you have his head in the sand going through GP2?
He's a sensitive guy, just like me. What do you expect? Anyway, the Camry limo has just pulled up and dropped off Nasser Hamid, who had to stop off for a bite to eat because the cafeteria is on strike. So, Nass, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Hello to everybody.
Hope you're doing well.
So far, so good.
I'm sure you're going to have a whole spiel on the Ferrari fiasco in Motorsports Mondial.
We'll try to.
We'll try to?
It's work in progress, and, you know, boys will be boys. But
real quick opinion before we go to break?
I think it will be sorted out, and because Ferrari is Formula One, whether Max believes it or not, so I think it will be sorted out.
You think so?
I think so.
Okay, well then we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with Motorsports Mondial after this brief message.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the man himself, Nasser Hamid.
Hola amigos, greetings and racing regards from Maine to Spain. Headlines from España are button up, Barrichello down. You know, for every winner there's a loser. Weber in front, finally, and Vettel behind. How did you enjoy the race, sir?
I did enjoy the race, and I really enjoyed the sneaky strategy from Braun. Ross Braun knew what he was doing at Ferrari, and he knows what he's doing at Braun.
Which means that Barrichello did not know what he was doing at Ferrari, and he does not know what he's doing at Braun.
Exactly.
Okay, we shall see. Okay, what a difference a year makes. Last year in the Spanish Grand Prix, Jenson Button bagged 3 points by finishing sixth. At the end of the 2008 season, those 3 points collected in Barcelona was all he had to show as the sun set on Honda F1 program, which was a very sad day for me, I must say. I'm a big Honda racing fan. This year in 2009, hard to believe, after 5 races, only driver to win a race this season apart from Jenson Button is Sebastian Vettel, the new cage rattler from Germany. Button's victory in the Spanish Grand Prix is the 9th successive win for pole sitter at Circuit de Catalunya. His season so far has the same flavor as Nigel Mansell's championship winning year. Like Mansell, Button was dressed down by many for going winless for a long time in his career, in his case for over 100 races, without a win. Finally, in a competitive car, the charge is on. If Jenson Button wins the championship, and this is pretty surprising, it will be the first time English drivers have won the title in successive years.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it is.
First time ever?
Yeah, well, that is. Now, they've had British drivers win back-to-back, but then one was English, the other was Scottish.
Okay.
So, you know, you have to read the fine print here.
Yeah, there's too many asterisks for me right now.
Yeah.
But very good. I think that's very exciting.
Yeah.
I want to hear more about Rubinho.
Yeah, it's coming up. Well, the one positive for Rubinho was, you're talking about the two-legged, right?
Exactly.
Okay. He was credited with fastest lap on lap 28. Ferrari and McLaren are without a win. It took 5 races before Massa, the model winner of last year's World Championship, scored his first points of the season, almost running on empty. While Massa argued with his team late in the race, teammate Raikkonen, remember him?
Yeah, that sleepy guy with the ice cream.
Yeah. You know, they asked him the other day, what's your favorite Jimi Hendrix song? And he said, oh, you have to think about it. And he says, oh, the one that says, excuse me while I kiss the sky, vodka.
Keep up the good work, Nass.
Thank you. And did you see him? I think it was in, I'm not sure if it was in practice on qualifying, where Raikkonen was telling the team, don't tell me every corner, every lap, I'm slow, I can see the lights. Did you watch or listen to that?
Mm-hmm.
I think the chemistry's gone between him and the team.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he has lost interest in motor racing. He's more interested in competing with Michel Mouton and Sandro Minardi.
Yeah, and the way he wears his hat now, He wears it like, you know, the guys in the hood, where you don't crimp it, you make it nice and flat, and it's bigger than your head.
Yeah, and he's got it almost as low exactly. as you can get it on his...
Uh-huh. And Masa wears it completely the other way, where he shows he's a team member and more machismo.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. All this and all the FIA fiasco going on, I get the impression that sales of big screen TVs are going up in Italy, which would be good for Panasonic.
Well, I think they're developing a new anti-breaking screen.
Oh, yeah?
Mm.
Luca must be... You have some...
Getting it sheathed in polycarbonate so he can throw stuff at it all night long and it won't hurt the television.
Luca must be lost for words. Another screw-up in qualifying saw Kimi looking for a Klondike bar just after Q1. So it's
a bizarre world out there.
It is. Trouble in Maranello Paradiso today and yesterday, which brings us to your man, Rubinho. Shades of Maranello in Montmelo for poor Rubinho. The two-legged Rubinho, who thought he was jockeyed around at Ferrari, is now facing the same handicap at the Braun barn. Was it a Braun conspiracy or supremacy? Depends on what side of the saddle you are on. So are you buying this theory that it was sabotage and a British team wanted to... Have we heard this before? A British team wanted to see a British driver win?
Yeah, I
have heard that before.
It's more the fact that they want their number one driver to get another win. You know, Rubinho will be given a race later in the season once Button's pretty much assured of getting the championship.
And once again, when I see a team principal come out and say, our guys have equal equipment, they have an equal chance to the championship, you know what that tells me?
Tell me.
Somebody's going
to... There's a number one and there's a number two.
Yeah.
It always seems to come up that way. But they have to say what they have to say because there are rules and regulations. But, you know, Jenson Button is younger than Rubinho. He's got a lot of experience.
Yeah, but, you know, there's another way of looking at it. The Braun team also won three other races. Now, who was driving that car?
Ooh. Exactly.
Exactly.
But to be honest with you, I believe that they will set it up so Rubens Barrichello wins one race this year.
Like Mr. Favre wasn't open.
Pretty much any time after this point now, they can probably afford to let him have one.
The token Rubinho race, which Ferrari would do occasionally as well.
Who will they give a win to?
Well, maybe let him win in Brazil or something.
Yeah,
very possible, exactly.
After Button's cinched up the title.
You know, and I feel sorry for Rubinho, but Rubens Barrichello is a smart enough man to know that he's back in the second saddle.
Yeah. Barrichello has long been a good racer and one of the few well-liked by media, fans, and industry insiders. But at the age of 37, the writing has to be on the wall, just like Fisichella and Trulli. Had Honda not pulled the plug on their F1 program, the Brazilian in the team would have been a famous name who was not even in his teens when Barrichello arrived in Formula 1. Barrichello was quoted after Sunday's race, "If I get a whiff of team orders, I will hang up my helmet on the spot." Pretty strong words.
Yeah. But how can he say that? Because the way Braun ran that strategy, it was obvious that they basically told Rubinho, "You've got to run the greatest race of your life if you're going to win this one."
Well, his problem was that the second set of tires,
he struggled.
Yeah. And these things happen. You know, I've seen it. It happens a lot in motor racing.
And not only that, but let's not forget that Rubens Barrichello has, you know, emotional scars over this from Schumacher.
From the Schumacher-Penske division.
Exactly. Yeah, okay. The Blitzkrieg.
Yeah. Okay, losing a race is always a hard pill to swallow for any race car driver, especially when the man on the top of the podium is your teammate. Rubens would be well advised not to let 2 points cost him his relationship and goodwill with the man, whose name is not only on the car, but it was his long association with Barrichello that brought him to the team. And going back to the first race, when the team was calling Rubinho to slow down in under a yellow.
Correct.
If you recall, even Ross Brawn had to get on the radio and say, "Slow down, Ruben, slow down." So sometimes you have to listen to the boss.
The papa.
Exactly. Dishing out dirty laundry in the press will never clean up the air. Just ask Alain Prost and Nigel Mansell about their departures from Ferrari and Williams, respectively. Barrichello will be hard-pressed to find another competitive seat. This is not the This is not the time to sing the blues.
You don't know me. I'm not just one of your many toys. You don't know me.
Thank you, Leslie. Now we go racing in other series, but staying in Viva España and Barcelona. Did you watch any of the other series like GP2 and whatever was going on over the weekend? Normally the answer is no, hopefully.
I did not. And I don't watch Speed at all anymore.
Why is that?
Because I think it's not a very good cable channel. I watch The Beeb.
Where do you watch The Beeb?
On the internet.
Yes, this time I did not. I was not able to get the race coverage for whatever reason.
I got the good one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What was the secret?
There's a password.
Okay. Well, I'm going to be for the Monaco Grand Prix, which is Memorial Day weekend. I'll be at my sister's place back east, and she is not on the Speed TV agenda. So I'm thinking of you will have to send me an email. What's the password?
I'll do that. What I do right before the race is I have the F1 Weekly forum.
That's what I do.
Yeah. Well.
In my case, it was not working. I tried a couple and...
Well, sometimes the newer ones, what I do is go to some of the other links from last week.
Yeah,
and then,
okay.
Boom, I finally found one.
Okay.
It's trial and error.
Okay, it's 3-hour difference in on the East Coast, so feel free to call me or I'll call you. Because I want to watch Monaco. Well, I was thinking, you know, even if I cannot watch, whoever gets the pole at Monaco is going to win the race.
Fernando Alonso?
Who?
Yeah, definitely, unless for some reason they can stay close enough to make a leapfrog in the pits.
Yeah,
it's going to be qualifying.
This will be a good chance for Massa or Vettel to pick a win, in case of Vettel another one, because if you run the car light, then you know you will be on pole, and we'll see what happens. There might be rain, and then change the whole thing. It has rained at Monaco before.
I know. That's I love the rain.
That's how Olivier Panis got his win. Okay, now we go to F1's official feeder series, GP2. No comfort for Nelsinho Piquet, even away from F1. Team reserve driver Romain Grosjean wins the opening round of the feeder series from pole position over teammate Tavarish Vitaly Petrov of Russia. In the second race featuring reverse grid for top 8, Grosjean came close to winning the sprint race also, which was a very impressive performance, finishing a close second to Italian Eduardo Mortara. And this is, as to quote, borrow a phrase from Mr. Derek Daly, the beauty of motor racing is you never know. Eduardo Mortara was running away with the F3 Euro Series title last year when Hülkenberg was having some issues. But when he got his act together, Eduardo was blown away. And this was his first weekend in GP2 and the second ever race he wins. So very impressive. And Hülkenberg qualified fourth. See, this is, you know, when people talk about Bardet and you're pushing him, he should be given a chance, this and that. Here is this kid, Nico Hülkenberg. This is his debut in the main series. First race qualifies on the fourth. And if you look at the people who qualified behind him, very impressive in terms of how much experience just in GP2 they have, 2 years, 3 years. So cream will always come to the top. Whether it's GP2 or Formula 2 or Timbuktu. Okay, Jerome D'Ambrosio. This is another kid I'm very impressed because I've been following his career for a few years. He's from Belgium. He was the third man on the podium for both races. And I would like to see him, you know, keep doing this, win some races and see if he can get a chance in Formula 1. We haven't had a good Belgian driver since Jackie Aix. And Boursin was pretty good too.
I concur.
Thank you, sir. Okay, Formula BMW Europe. Welcome to another Brazilian Felipe baby. Once again, cream rising to the top. This kid, Luis Felipe Nasser, took pole position for both the opening races of the season. You know, I don't know much about this kid, but I read in the Formula BMW press release, I tried to do some research on driver DB on him. Apparently, this was his only second weekend of motor racing. And he got pole position on both. Think about it.
That's crazy.
Very, very impressive. In race one, he had to settle for second behind Danish driver Michael Christensen, who was Rookie of the Year last year and finished second in the BMW World Finals behind Alexander Rossi. In race two, Felipe Nasser returned the favor to score his first win with Christensen second. Dutch driver Robin Vriens was the top rookie, finishing fourth in both races. And Felipe Nasser's papito, I believe, is Amir Nasser, and this is the same. They run a team, racing team in Brasilia, Distrito Federale in Brazil, And at one time, I'm not sure now, but at one some years ago, Elio Castroneves was a partner in this Amir Nasser racing team. F1 Weekly listener Kazim Manzoor, and you saw the link I posted on the forum, he was 8th in race 1 and took to the air in race 2 after a racing incident with Jasmine Jaffer of Malaysia. And his dad called me more yesterday. Kaz is doing good, everything is fine, so we look forward to the next race. Now we go to Le Mans series from Spa-Francorchamps. Victory for Peugeot 908 Turbo Diesel. Winning drivers were Nicolas Minassian, Simon Pagenaud, and Christian Klein. Second was the Pescarolo Jet driven by Jean-Christophe Bouillon and Christophe Tinsou. Olivier Panis, he's back in the frame here, was fourth. Naren Karthikeyan was sixth in an Audi entered by Dr. Colin Collis, also known as Chowski from the Midland and Force India days. Bruno Senna did not finish, and Bruno Senna will be at Le Mans 24-hour race, so I'm hoping that I can do another interview with him and get some scoop how close he came to F1 and what his name is again being linked with different teams. Would like to see him get a fair shot next year.
Absolutely.
World Superbikes from Monza. Domination and disappointment for Texas rider Ben Spies. He was on his way to victory in race one, but on the final lap, he slowed down with some issues. I'm not sure if it was mechanical or fuel. Coming out of Parabolica, eventually finishing 15th. Winning for the first time and in front of home crowd was Michele Fabrizio. Noriyuki Haga was second, making it a Ducati 1-2. Ex-MotoGP rider Max Biaggi was third for Aprilia. On the opening lap, both Max Neukirchner and Brendan Roberts sustained some serious injuries in a crash, and the race had to be red flag.
I watched this.
Oh, finally you watched something.
That crash was unbelievable.
And did you watch it on Speed TV or Home and Garden Network?
Home and Garden Network. They have a special program just for Moa. But no, that was, you know, when I'm flipping the channels and I see Monza, I usually stop, Nasser.
Exactly. You have to.
Yeah. There are rules.
Yeah. Monza, Spa, yeah. The old Nürburgring.
So I caught the beginning and caught this this crash, and I was surprised on how long it took for the red flag to come out.
Yeah. Now, what if NASCAR has a race exhibition raid at Monza? What will you do?
I would have to watch, just for laughs.
No, that could be serious racing.
That would be great. And then they would have those little Italian license plates on the front.
What will they say?
Welcome. No, bienvenuti.
Cool.
Viva Italia.
Okay, talking of NASCAR, we go to NASCAR racing. Big news for Martin and bad news for Mayfield. Ageless Mark Martin from beautiful Batesville, Arkansas, wins the cup race last weekend at Darlington. Jimmy Johnson was second and Tony Stewart third. Monty was a solid 20th, 6 places ahead of Scott Speed. Max Pappas, son-in-law of Emerson Fittipaldi, was 35th.
What was Max Pappas doing in there?
Well, he has been in the stock cars, the trucks. You know, he's a race car driver. He needs to make a living. He needs to put some salami on the table. You know? Why are you rolling your eyes?
I think that's just terrific.
Yeah, good for him. Okay, Jeremy Mayfield has been suspended indefinitely by a NASCAR after failing a random drug test at Richmond International Raceway. Mayfield is trying to sort this out with his doctor and NASCAR officials. He's saying their claim is that he was taking some prescription drugs and that was mixed with some off-the-counter drugs and reaction made it, you know, the thing come positive. What the truth is, we'll find out in due course of time. But if I was an attorney with Shapiro and Cochran, my defense for my client would be something like this. Your Honor, Mr. Mayfield ran into a gypsy woman and she put something in his chicken wings at Hooters.
That's a really good. That would work.
And in the South, this is Bible. This story will fly.
My parents live in the South.
That his Hooters wings were tainted by some gypsy woman?
Yeah.
A lot of gypsies in the South, Nasser?
Yeah. Push it with the gypsy reference, but...
It's the Mayfield reference, folks. But anyway.
It was a McCoy, that's what it was. So. Well, that's Hatfield, sorry.
Okay. Indy 500 qualifying. Brazilian Elio Castroneves on pole for the third time. His Penske teammate from Australia, Ryan Briscoe, will start second, and Dario Franchitti from Scotland will be the third man on the front row. You're going to watch the Indy 500, I'm sure.
I'm sure I will.
Do you watch normally?
I watch some of it, then go barbecue, and then come back, watch a little bit more, and then go have a couple of Stellas, and then
fall asleep.
Watch a little bit, and then I'll catch that last lap. And the winner is...
Yeah, and then, of course, you can switch immediately to the World 600.
Correct.
And that will be on till you get up in the morning.
Exactly.
Row 2 will be Graham Rahal, Scott Dixon, and Tony Kanaan. Row 3, Mario Moraes, Marco Andretti, and Will Power, who is also in a Penske entry. Row 4, Danica Patrick, Alex Lloyd, and Rafael Matos. Row 5, Paul Tracy, Vitor Meira, and Justin Wilson. This, if you look at the name, this basically will show that there is a Brazilian driver in each of the top 5 rows, which speaks very well for the depth of racing talent from that country. And I have a very strong feeling that this will be Castro Neves' win, or definitely a Penske win, unless there is some schmazzle or, you know.
I'm predicting Danica all the way.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
This is going to be her day in May for Danica.
Danica drinking milk. That will be the day.
Mamma mia.
Exactly. Some sad news, you know, from England, 26-year-old Joe Tandy was killed along with his passenger in a road accident on Wednesday. He was the owner of Joe Tandy Racing and won the 2005 Formula Palmer Audi Championship. And I believe this American kid who's racing in Formula Palmer these days, Joseph Newgarden, I'm pretty sure he was racing for Joe Tandy Racing. And the team has said that they will continue, yeah, which is a good idea. And also, you know, I don't know if you mentioned in the opening, father of Luca di Montezemolo also passed away this week.
I did not mention that, but yes, that is true. That's why he missed the meeting with Max at Heathrow.
Yes, so our condolences to the respective families. Okay, now I move ahead with some information, segment called Lap Ahead, a look at what's happening in the world of motor racing this coming weekend and beyond. Hockenheim, this weekend, season opener for F3 Euro Series and DTM. In F3 Euro Series, preseason favorite is Jules Bianchi of France, driving for and managed by Nicolas Todd. Cage rattling is expected. You know how they, you know, different things predict different things. Now, when the season is starting, we're going to mention, you know, the expected cage rattlers also.
Upcoming cage rattlers.
The designated cage rattler.
Yeah. And we'll see what happens. So, in this case, F3 Euro Series, cage rattling is expected from his rookie teammate from Finlandia, Valtteri Bottas, who was impressive in preseason testing. This kid won the Formula Renault last year, and he is pretty quick. And I hope he's quick and focused, unlike another famous Finn. What was his name?
I can't even remember him now.
Okay. Well, he was focused when he started.
Go get an ice cream, you might think of him. Okay, Jake Rosenzweig from the East Coast is the only U.S. driver in the series. Now, this kid was also, no, nothing against him, but he was also in Formula Renault last year, and he was nowhere near the top 5. So I don't know how much experience he has, but he may be, you know, biting too big of a hot dog by getting into F3 Euro Series this season.
That happens.
Yeah, but, you know, we wish everybody all the best. Talking of DTM, Tom Christensen announced 2009 will be his last year in Tin Tops, but he will continue to race in sports cars. Maybe by the time he retires, he may have won 12 Le Mans races. So we'll see what happens. Poe, Formula Master season gets underway in the streets of the city in the Pyrenees near the Spanish border. Have you been there, sir? Because
I have been to Poe.
You're a really nice town?
Oh, it's wonderful. I love Poe. It's a nice town. It's lovely. The evenings, good restaurants. It's in France, Ness.
Can't be all bad.
And it's in southern France. Great weather, beautiful women, outstanding wine. The countryside is absolutely gorgeous. The hotels are just wonderful. Love it.
Good. And this is near the Spanish border, and I think they should get Al Stewart to drop the green flag.
Good for you.
Yeah, good for him, too.
I think they should get me to drop the green flag.
Yeah. Well, with all that passion you have for Poe, how come you're not there? We can do a live hookup, you know. For the podcast.
That's true. That could be the future F1 Weekly headquarters. If we're going to relocate, Poe would be perfect.
Yes, some place which is...
Isn't your brother's place not too far from there?
No, he's over by Angoulême.
Western, southwest France.
Towards Bordeaux.
Yeah. And, no, that'll be something, you know, if when we're 64 and counting.
A couple of weeks from now.
Yeah. Whenever, you know, we do a podcast from like some Mediterranean, not core place, you know. That'll be nice.
Yeah,
a
Mediterranean villa. I'm up for that.
Excellent. Yeah. I'll take care of all of it, guys. The zeros will be flowing.
Oh, yeah. Okay, preseason favorite is Swiss driver Fabio Laimer. Cage rattling expected from rookies Alexander Rossi of Northern California and Paul Warhaug of Norway. And Rossi, this will be pretty much his, you know, introduction to European racing. He has raced a few times in the Formula BMW Europe, but this is his full time with British team called Hitech. So we wish him all the best, and let's see how things pan out. So it's a street fest, and it should be fun. And also on this website, folks, it's a Formula Master website, is formulamaster.net, and most of the time they have some sort of videos also right after the event. So if you want to check it out, it's a nice place, there's no question about it. And the racing history there goes back, what, like 80, 90 years?
It goes back to the Edwardian era.
Yeah. Okay, looking further ahead, August 1st, London Triathlon. Jenson Button will race against 11,000 competitors. The event will feature a 1,500-meter swim, a 40-kilometer bike ride, and a 10-kilometer run. And this is rumor. I have not been able to verify this. Rumor has it that Rubinho will be given a 2-minute head start.
And I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, let's see what happens then. Okay. And we end today's Motorsports Mondial with Musical Mondial. Some more of music we had at the beginning, and this is called La Nave del Olvido. Please enjoy. Gracias and adios, amigos.
Thank you, Nasser, for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. We're going to take a quick break and come back with the interview of this week's wonderful podcast. We'll be back in 60 seconds.
Our shout-outs last week, let's get through them now. The podcasters at F1Weekly.com.
We invite you to visit our forum page. Topics range from Fangio to Fisico and from baked beans to racing scene.
Nas, welcome back. And now another outstanding interview between yourself and Michael Ramies. Please introduce this gentleman.
Well, first of all, I would like to thank Mr. Peter Habish of San Francisco Formula One, you know, this group that gets together for Formula One races. He was kind enough to send me an email saying that, hey, this up-and-coming talent, local talent, why don't you go and talk to him? So I got in touch with him and his dad, Tom. And Michael Ramies is a young, talented California kid from Portola Valley, which is not too far from where we are, our palatial corporate headquarters. This year, he won the Skip Barber Western Regional Championship, which finished last month at Laguna Seca, and it was quite a duel, which he was able to win, and you can see on their website. His father, Tom, also joins in this conversation, and he has some very interesting insights into USF on project. And it's amazing, you know, we live here, and all of a sudden, somebody says, go talk to somebody, and the gentleman has a wealth of information about stuff we want to know more. So my thanks to Tom and Michael, and all the best to him in his racing career.
Okay, folks, I'm here in beautiful San Jose, California, with Michael Ramies and his corporate sponsor slash daddy, Tom. How are you, folks?
I'm well, thank you.
I'm doing great, thanks.
Okay, Michael, first question is, tell us your age and what part of California are you from?
I'm 18 years old, and I'm from Bertola Valley, California, near San Francisco.
What was your first introduction to motor racing?
My dad heard about the Jim Russell go-karting school from a friend, and he took me up there, and I was really good, and then I liked it, so we started go-karting.
Now, I saw a picture of you in a battery-powered Porsche as a three-year-old. Do you remember those days?
All I remember about that car was my dad put a real Porsche badge on it. I don't remember anything about the car, really.
Yeah, it was a Christmas present. And he always loved cars, knew the names of every car since he was like a year and a half. So when we got him his battery-powered Porsche, me being an auto mechanic, I got a real Porsche emblem and put it in the front, and it was shiny, and he liked it.
Now, did he develop the interest in racing from you, or you develop following racing because he got interested in it?
I think he got interested because,
you got me interested in cars.
In cars. So he was always in the cars, and when he could find out and got out of diapers and knew that the cars can go fast, then he got really interested in speed. I mean, speed. Look how fast I'm going, Daddy. I mean, bicycles, skateboards, you name it. He goes fast as he can go.
Okay, Michael, back to you. How long were you in karting, and tell us about your karting days.
Well, karting, it always seemed like more of a hobby, but I did it for about 4 or 5 years, I would say.
Yeah.
And, never really competitive. We didn't have a great kart. We just, most people that win those races switch chassis, switch engines. We just kept the same chassis and engine for all those years. Less and less competitive, but I mean,
yeah, too much money.
Then we realized how much money it costs to win go-karting, and it's like, well, why don't we just get in a car and see how I do?
Okay. Now, after doing so many years in karting, did you think it was very helpful when you switched to kart racing?
I guess, go-karts do seem faster than some cars because they're so open and low to the ground, so it does make you a little bit more fearless, and all that learning the racing line and how to take corners, that all helps too.
And have you ever attended any racing schools, Skip Barber, Jim Russell, and others too?
Yeah.
And what did you learn from the school which you said, oh man, this is something totally new for me?
I did both Jim Russell and Skip Barber, but I did Skip Barber more, and what I learned most at Skip Barber, threshold braking. Because go-karts, you really don't need to slam on the brakes a whole lot, it seems like, so, yeah.
Between the two schools, which one would you recommend?
Skip Barber's a lot cheaper, and they have, Jim Russell has only, like, 3 instructors for a 12-corner track, whereas Skip Barber has, like, 8 instructors for a 12-corner, like, 11-corner track, so I think, car-wise, Jim Russell's better, but instruction-wise, I think Skip Barber's better.
Now, what kind of cars these two schools use?
Skip Barber now, they have the, it's an old Formula, I don't know, it's a CL2 frame car with a 4-cylinder motor in it, 5-speed sequential gearbox, mm-hmm. And Jim Russell basically uses modified Formula 3 tubs, so larger people, like any customer, can fit in the car.
Larger people meaning like me.
Why not? I don't know.
Okay, nice to know I have a career.
Not 18-year-olds, anybody that wants to race them.
Okay, last month you won the 2008-09 Skip Barber Western Race Series first. Tell us how a little bit about this series, how many races they do, and how was your season?
Well, my season started, I finished second and third in the first weekend, so it was a good start. And we did about, I'd say there was 6 or 7 race weekends and 2 races in one day on each weekend. And I was never off the podium the entire season. And except for the very last race of the season, we actually would have lost the championship by 1 point. But because the guy in front of me, we had contact, we got penalized. And I ended up, we got to drop our lowest score. So I ended up winning the championship because we got penalized.
Okay. Now, Tom, when you go to the races, are you a football dad, a pushy Paul, or you just let him do his own thing?
I used to be a pushy guy and try to give him tons of advice. But, you know, what I learned is just to be quiet because he knows what he's doing. He proved it by winning the championship. So I pretty much, shake his hand, wish him luck. And I can't really give him advice because he's the race car driver now. And I'm the sponsor / dad / I'm stressed out watching my little boy out there. You know, he's still little to me, and it still makes me nervous. But when I see him win, it makes my day.
Okay, Michael, back to you. Being quick in karting, you see a lot of kids who do very well in karting. For one reason or the other, don't do so well in car racing.
Yeah.
If you're quick in karting, do you think that guarantees that you will be quick in cars too?
I don't necessarily think it guarantees, because if you become too comfortable in go-karts, you won't know it hit you in a car. But, I mean, it's not guaranteed to help, but I'm sure it does, being quick. Yeah.
Okay. And main difference and adjustment that you had to adjust to from when you went from karting to cars?
Transmissions and body roll. I mean, chassis roll, like chassis, like with suspension and all that, yeah. Weight transfer, yeah.
Okay, now we are obviously more wide in tough economic times. What has been your experience in raising sponsorship in okay times?
really, really difficult. We don't have any yet, so I think that speaks for itself.
Now, when you're in these racing series, regional skip bobber type, obviously they go through a lot of drivers. Some are very talented.
Yeah.
Do they offer any help in raising your media awareness or putting your name in front of potential sponsors?
I know that in national weekends, they give you seminars on like media relations and car setup and all that stuff. So I think they do. I wasn't there for the first race, but I know they gave out a seminar on like talking to people, talking to media, and always assuming that they're around you and how to behave and stuff like that.
Well, do you have any plans in motion right now, what you will be doing for the rest of the season?
I'm hoping to do some more races, the Skip Barber National Series, and next year we're trying to raise money to start a Coney Challenge Porsche team.
Okay. For our listeners, Coney Challenge, obviously part of the Grand-Am Series.
Yeah.
How much it costs to race in the series that you are looking to
$250 for one driver, but we're trying to get myself a teammate. And so for two drivers for one car for Coney, it should be about $450,000.
And you're talking about a competitive team?
Yeah, very competitive.
Okay. And now, Tom, we're going to go to you. You have an interesting story on F1, now USGPE, and maybe something else next year, but you know what we're talking about.
Yes. Growing up in the car business and being an auto mechanic in my area, I have some really great, great people. And one of my customers, totally into cars, he's retired now, but he knew the principles of this USF1 thing, which I've never heard about. And when he came to me and said, "Hey, Tom, let's go to this USF1 investor meeting." I said, "What are you talking about? I don't have any money." And he said, "No, I want to get your son up there and introduce him to Peter Windsor and all those guys." And I said, "Okay, let's go." So we went up there. And after the first meeting, I got a little more comfortable because, you know, I wasn't an investor. So I, you know, shook hands. Next meeting came by, brought 25 investors. Went pretty well. I'm just getting respect. And then the next meeting, I said, "We really have to do it." So I basically took over all the investment for them. Got the venue, put together the sound system, the projectors, all of it. Got 64 people through different, even a guy that worked at a Ferrari dealer had a great contact list. And he brought those people. And it came 64 people. And I say probably within 3 to 5 weeks, they raised their first round and closed their first round of investing. Okay. And I felt good.
Oh, that's good. Now, what can you tell our listeners about in terms of what their plan is? You know, they're talking about having a car next year. My understanding is they were supposed to announce a driver, at least one, by now, which they haven't done. Can you fill us in a little bit more on this as to what their plan is, what you can?
Well, the only thing I really know is when they first put their website up, I thought the website would stay up and be informative. The website's now down. And they're talking about American drivers and stuff, but I think now they're more concentrating on, they just moved into their new headquarters in North Carolina, and they're just, right now they're concentrating on getting the car built, getting the car running, but they also should be grooming drivers. They should have them already picked. Maybe they do, and maybe it's a secret, and maybe they're going to announce it when the car's done. I'm not really sure.
I've never heard of a secret world champion, but
I don't know.
Yeah, but I'm also, you know, I would like to see this thing take off and succeed. But if they're going to have a car next year and they're going to put an American kid, they really should have two or three young American drivers sponsored by them in Europe. Do you know anything about that?
I don't really know of any American car drivers in Europe
that they're
thinking of. I mean, it's really competitive over there. There's not a lot of there's not as much open wheel here as it is over there, and I don't know. There should be a checklist of at least 20 drivers that they should have and start narrowing down by now. They have not shared it with me. Okay. Let's put it that way.
Tom, going back to you, what's your main interest in motor racing? Indy cars, Formula One, NASCAR, drag racing, or do you follow them all?
I only really truly follow Formula One. Just because it interests me the most. I don't have anything against NASCAR. I can't watch it on TV because I think it's boring watching circles. But I can appreciate that they're racing for long periods of time. And I think it would be fun to drive because, you know, they're always passing people and whatnot. But I just something about road racing that I just like more.
Among the drivers in Formula One, who do you like and who do you don't like?
Well, I don't dislike anybody. Nobody has any reason. None of them have done anything stupid enough for me to dislike them, but I really like Vettel right now. Because he's more of an underdog last year, and he won in Monza in the rain, and that was great. So,
I'm sure you watched the season finale, the last few laps in Brazil last year. What was your take on that?
I wouldn't feel as bad for Monza as I do if I didn't. He thought he won a world championship for like a full minute, and that was really that would probably hurt him more than just saying knowing he wouldn't have won from the beginning. But I was happy for Hamilton because like he was probably thinking the same thing. Oh, I lost it, but then he got it back, so I bet he was really excited.
Now, will you please tell our listeners that your website, which will be up soon, what the web address is so they can follow up on you and what's happening?
It's www.michaelramiesracing.com.
Okay, and it should be up in the next 30 days?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, we'll keep an eye on this. Okay, we have a lot of young ladies listening to us. Are you on Facebook?
Yes, I am. And I'm also going to be starting a Facebook Michael Ramies fan page. And I'm pretty sure I'm the only person with that name on Facebook, so it should be pretty easy to find.
How do you spell your last name?
Ramies, and it's Michael with A-E-L. Most people do E-A-L, but it's different.
Okay, I'm glad you mentioned that. Thank you. Any message you would have for listeners of F1 Weekly, please?
Enjoy the rest of the F1 season, I guess, because I know that's what you F1 Weekly listeners like, and try and follow my career if you can.
Well, we certainly will, and I'm going to come up to Sears Point next time you are racing. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Michael Ramies, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, let's go right into the wrap-up. Unfortunately, we don't have a forum update, but trust me, go to the F1 Weekly forum. It's a lot of fun, and I know there's a lot of listeners out there that haven't signed up to the forum. It's super easy. It's very secretive.
It's a lot of fun because you get a lot of input, a lot of insight into what's going on, and you get a lot of... just tidbits that you wouldn't get otherwise, and it's a good place to kind of voice your opinion of what's going on in Formula One.
Absolutely. So go check out the forum. And Nasser, you got a comment?
Yes. Regarding the forum, it's also a very good source for information. If you're looking for something, how to do this, do that, racing related especially, a lot of people who are willing to help and give you information. And that's how I found out about these links to go and watch racing.
Yeah.
And so far, and I hope it stays this way, we don't have people using profanity or calling people names, so which is very good.
No, so, this is a sophisticated intellectual forum.
Yeah, so thanks to everybody who...
No flaming.
Yeah.
So there you have it. Instead of the forum updates, we're going to go ahead and pick an email from the millions we get each week. Steve?
This one's from Terry Ballard, and he writes, "I am new to your podcast, and I absolutely love it. I have been an open-wheel racing fan for a long time, and Formula One is my favorite. Please keep up the outstanding work. I don't miss a show. You're the best." Terry. Thanks, Terry.
Okay, keep up the good work, Terry Ballard. Like the email, and those are the kind of emails we like to read when they just simply love us. Yes. These other emails, circular garbage file.
After we review them and determine whether or not they have any positive impact on the show.
Exactly. Keep up the good work, Stephen. Real quickly, I want to thank the San Francisco Formula One group. Of course, Mr. Peter Habich doing an outstanding job. Go to their website, sff1.com. They get all the great photographs from Bolloré Caillé and much more information about Formula One. They're great guys, and they listen to F1Weekly.com. Marin Karting is proud to organize and support the 2009 Jim Russell Northern California Rotax Series. Marin Karting offers CRG carts, engines, and parts for all carts, engine service, driver coaching, and trackside support to Northern California carters. For more information, contact Marin Karting at 415-898-0999 or at marinkarting.com. I want to mention our MySpace, Facebook, and Twitter sites. Just do a search for F1 Weekly, F1 Weekly listeners, Clark Rogers, Steve Nasser, and make us a friend because we are all over those websites.
We are social networking gods.
Exactly. We are a hive of busy, happy bees when it comes to social networking. Real quickly, if you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email us at info@f1weekly.com. I want to thank everybody who listens to the program. Without you, we have no show. Thank you, and good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.